Hey everybody, it's the Loop Mechanics Podcast. Your hosts Bealus and Scormus are here to ramble on for a while about video and tabletop games, or whatever nonsense comes into their twisted little minds. Then, if you are very lucky, they will crawl off back under the rocks from whence they came, only to return again, like clockwork, next week. Seriously, these idiots are more unavoidable than death or taxes, and much less pleasant to endure. Anyway, enjoy the show, if you can.
So, welcome back, everybody. I'm Scormus.
I'm Bealus.
And, hey, I'm still here.
Yay. You sound very tired.
Well, we're recording two shows. Yes, this is a week prior, a little over a week prior to you hearing it, but knocking it out so that I can go back to my recliner and die for a while. But before then, is anything going on with you this week?
Not a whole lot. I've been just mostly playing Minecraft with the family on our server.
Very nice. I did ask Ten about that, by the way. She's not super interested in playing Minecraft at this time.
That's fine.
Ten being my lovely bride, for those who do not know.
Well, the main reason we were mentioning it and sent her an invitation is because with the server, nobody else has to be on. If she just wants to get on there and just futz around,
right,
in a stable world, then she can just go and do whatever she wants, and then when everybody else jumps in, she can jump in with us and do whatever we're doing, or keep doing what she's doing.
Right. Kind of like Minecraft Dungeons in that way, with the single player mm-hmm. and multiplayer versions, which stands to reason.
But far less combat.
Yes. Anyway, there was something I wanted to talk about today a little bit on the intro, just briefly. Let me bring up the web page again. By the time you guys are hearing this, it's going to be roughly an 8 days or a week to go with this project. I don't see it going under because of its nature, plus also the fact that it, as of the time we're recording right now, it has 7 times the goal it needed with 16 days to go. Anyway, what am I talking about? Well, I am a huge fan of Kevin Crawford, the developer. He has made several games that I very much enjoy, specifically Stars Without Number and Worlds Without Number. They are excellent old-school revival games. They're compatible with each other. Just good fun, right? And I know last year when we were still doing the project for Kickstarter project for Atlas of the Latter Earth, the big world supplement for Worlds Without Number, Kevin mentioned that he had an interest in a new setting, a new game that would be compatible with these, but a different style of game. Instead of sci-fi or fantasy, he wanted to do cyberpunk. And so, right now on Kickstarter, Cities Without Number is up. It's already funded. Thing is, I had missed the notice that it was up, that it was coming, that it was dropping on Kickstarter. I don't know why I missed it. I should have gotten that, notice, but I didn't. But I stumbled across it the other day and backed it immediately, because, fuck yes! Of course I'm backing that. As, during the pre-show, I believe I described, Tubulus, since they're compatible with each other, you take your Cities Without Number and Worlds Without Number, at the very least, cross-reference them, and you've got Shadowrun with a better system, just the serial numbers filed off. You could basically very easily make any sort of game you want by just combining them together. Hell, if like he does
Spelljammer.
Yeah, basically, you've got stars without number and worlds without number. So, boom, you could do a science fantasy game right there. Cities without number, add some cyberpunk to it. If he were to put out a game that specifically involves heavy mechs, slap that in there and you have Rifts. Well, no, you have something like Rifts. And it's a very easy to play, old school Renaissance type of game. You got your classic attributes, got levels and whatnot, but the gameplay is just so familiar and easy. Character generation, very familiar and easy. It's just super. Plus, Kevin Crawford has been renowned for one big thing, world building. And the tools that he includes in Stars Without Number for generating your own star systems and building your own planets and whatnot are on par with those in Traveler. And I've heard that, I mean, I have Worlds Without Number, but I haven't directly played it yet. It's on my list. But it has world building rules. You can use the standard setting, the Latter Earth, or it's got rules in it for building your own setting, and it's among, I've heard it described by many reviewers as being some of the best world-building tools you can get in a role-playing game. Even if you don't play it as a role-playing game, just using it as tools for building your own D&D setting, or Warhammer setting, or whatever. It's just really, really great. So I expect we're probably going to get much the same with Cities Without Number. And I'm not trying to sell it here. I just thought people deserve to know it's out there because, holy crap, this is, in my opinion, a game not to miss. Do you have thoughts on this, sir?
I'm not a huge fan of those games. But, you know, I'm glad you're happy with them. I don't have a whole lot to say about it.
I know. It's just, in my opinion, there's not a lot. I mean, there's some games that have, that can cross over, like World of Darkness games, right?
Mm-hmm.
They all share a very similar system, and they're supposed to be, you can cross them with each other.
Right.
That's debatable as to how well that works, but they use a similar system. With this, with Stars Without Number, Worlds Without Number, and coming up, Cities Without Number, these kind of seamlessly work together because they're modular. You could take the magic system from Worlds Without Number and just tack it in to Stars Without Number if you wanted to have a Spelljammer type of setting. Have magic included in your science fiction. Or if you wanted to have a science fantasy, you know, more fantasy, but you've got, you know, laser guns and whatnot, you can just slot that in to your Worlds Without Number right out of Stars Without Number, because they all are just built specifically for that purpose. And that's what's so cool about them. Anyway, I'm excited.
Well, I'm happy you're excited.
And especially since Kevin made a point of saying there's no real stretch goals. So he's working on the game. You get what you get. And he doesn't want stretch goals because he has plans to have it out by the end of February of next year. So a year from now, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
But with his track record, I obviously can't guarantee anything because I'm not involved, but odds are it'll be out before then and delivered before then because he's really good at this. So, yeah, I'm kind of thrilled. Anyway, enough gushing about a Kickstarter project. Shall we move on to not gushing about about something?
Sure.
Roll the dice to see if I'm drunk.
Okay, so Bayless.
Yes.
You know how January was kind of the, let's yell at Wizards of the Coast month?
Yeah.
And frankly, it was well deserved. But now we're kind of in the aftermath of that. Most people are going back to their regular lives, whether they stick with a new game or some people are going to go back to 5th edition and whatever, that's fine, whatever they want to do. But it seems like things are quieting down.
For the most part.
The lead guy, his name's Brink, for Wizards of the Coast has been going and getting interviewed by some YouTubers, D&D YouTubers, and have been honestly been getting grilled pretty well by them. And yeah, he's keeping the company line, but he's working the PR hard to get people back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're at, it appears. Well, it got me thinking about the situation and the aftermath. Now, when this all started, I just so I could see the different opinions of the whole fiasco, every time I saw a YouTuber who had something to say about the whole OGL nonsense, I subscribed to them on YouTube, and I would watch their content, and I noted what they had to say, and just kind of, I got a wide breadth of opinions on what was going on. And it was interesting seeing some people who literally didn't comment at all. Taking 20, I'm looking at you. Maybe they couldn't because of contracts with Wizards of the Coast or whatever, I don't know. But some people had nothing to say. Other people had a lot to say. And when everything hashed out, and finally Wizards gave in for the, you know, as far as we can tell at the end of the month, when they basically said, no more, we're going to leave the whole OGL alone. Which, by the way, right. I don't know if you saw Ginny D's interview.
Mm-hmm.
They committed to putting the all future SRDs, especially like for 1D&D, into Creative Commons. And they haven't done so, but they are looking at adding all the previous ones for 3rd edition and 3.5 to Creative Commons. Their idea is all SRDs will go into Creative Commons and people are free to use that content in perpetuity, irrevocable, all that good stuff. So that's good, right?
I'll believe it when I see it.
Exactly. It was a concern of mine, but him saying that that's where they're going, that's their intention. I'm pretty happy with that. Anyway, it was interesting seeing with all these different content creators on YouTube talking about this product, talking about the situation. And a lot of them were saying there was a huge push of before Wizards gave up, where should you go? If you don't want to play 5th edition, what games should you try? We did that ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We offered up an example, 10 different games we thought would be good examples of games to move on to that specifically weren't connected to Wizards of the Coast's SRD at all. There were other games I would have suggested otherwise, but that's fine. So anyway, it seems like, especially from sales numbers, Pathfinder 2nd Edition and, to a lesser degree, Call of Cthulhu were the two big winners in this free-for-all of games to go to. They sold out all their books basically for like 8 months in advance, and they're now having to reprint books for the rest of the year. So that's great. Always good to see games doing well. But like I said, in the aftermath, I've seen a lot of those content creators. Some of them have gone back to just, they've quietly slipped back into doing 5th edition content again. Okay. You know, cool. That's what they want to do. They're okay with that. Cool. But a massive portion of them are pushing Pathfinder 2nd edition content. And you know what? Can't blame them. Because that's where a lot of people went. Except, there's a problem. A lot of people pushed Pathfinder 2nd edition as the obvious choice to move to from leaving D&D 5th edition. Oh, but the most obvious game to go to would be Pathfinder 2nd edition. It's a modern fantasy system. Oh, people will find it so easy to move to.
Uh-huh.
I have Pathfinder 2nd edition. It's a fine game. I don't have a problem with it. It's a little too crunchy for me. But okay. Whatever. It has some benefits over 5th edition, in my opinion. And it has some detriments. But D&D 5th edition is epic power fantasy, right?
Right.
Players get powerful very quickly, and they're like superheroes. Just fantasy superheroes. Would you say that's the same with Pathfinder?
Really? I don't remember when we were playing first edition Pathfinder that the characters got obscenely powerful in any relative time span.
No. It was a crunchier version of D&D 3.5. Just like, well, second edition isn't really related to Pathfinder 2nd edition isn't related to 5th edition D&D. It's more of an evolution of the original Pathfinder. But it is more epic fantasy. Could you say power fantasy to some degree? Yeah. But like I told you guys when I first broached the idea of playing Pathfinder 1st edition years ago, back in the early 2000s, I said, this is like D&D 3.5, only the rules are better, and it's way more deadly. If you go from being a epic power fantasy player, and you're used to your character going out there and whipping ass, and being all epic and awesome, to a game where the rules are crunchier, and although there are some benefits to that, you're already trying to learn that, and your character is squishier by far to your D&D 5th edition character at a similar level. Yeah, maybe it wasn't the best choice. And my concern is this is going to drive people back to 5th edition simply out of, yeah, we were sold a bill of goods, and we want to go back to our epic power fantasy rather than when they should have gone to a game like Dungeon World or Conan, Adventures in an Age Undreamed Of. That's a great fucking game. I would say DCC RPG, Dungeon Crawl Classics, but it's for the first couple levels, very deadly, but super fun. So, I don't know. It just concerns me that people may have been pushed the wrong game when they were told, oh, this will be the easiest for you to learn, when really that's not... I mean, yeah, sure, okay, if you have some help, maybe it's easy to learn. Easier to learn. But is it the type of game they really wanted to play? You know?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Pathfinder, the first one, was okay. It was better than D&D 4th edition.
By far.
But, I don't know. I never really enjoyed running it, but 5th edition just, I don't know, was just a lot more... It was easier to get into it, easier to run, easier to play. I just enjoy it better.
Yeah, there's
so
less crunch by far.
Well, not just that, but it just, it takes a lot of stress off of the game master.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to make all these rulings because of this rule says this, and this rule says this, and this rule says this, and this rule says this. And, you know, you've got all these little things that intertwine together, and you got to frickin' sort it out just to mm-hmm. make a ruling. Ah. And then they came up with second edition Pathfinder, and it just took that crunch and ran with it. And I'm seeing a lot of people who jump ship to Pathfinder like, oh my God, this sucks. And they're going back to fifth edition. It's not for everyone.
No.
And that's fine. There are people who love Pathfinder, love the crunch. That's the kind of game for them. And you know what? Fantastic. That's why they have all these different systems, because sometimes you got to keep looking until you find your game. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. It's like the old commercial for Mounds and Almond Joy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you want that power fantasy that's easy to play, easy to learn, and has just the right amount of rules. And sometimes you don't. Sometimes you want an epic fantasy which has rules for literally everything. Which, once the game master knows the rules, super awesome. Because you know the rules. Great.
But the players always find a way to hit that middle ground
mm-hmm.
between the rules. And so saying that they've got the rules for everything that can come up with the game is just ridiculous.
Right. Now, people like that, though. There are people that like it, and they were pushing hard for people to chum to Pathfinder. I get uh-huh. that. And honestly, I supported it, too.
Not a bad game.
During the pre-show, you made an excellent point when we were talking about this. If people had scattered out amongst the hundreds of other games, some went to Merkborg, some went to Dungeon World, some went to Conan, some went to Shadow of the Demon Lord, and so on, right? Scattered out all these different games. There would have been less of an impact than people primarily going and buying a fuck ton of Pathfinder books and a fuck ton of Call of Cthulhu books, who are the number two and number three games in the market, effectively, which told Wizards of the Coast, hey, we done fucked up and our two nearest competitors are selling out their books. That may have been that, in addition to the D&D Beyond, people unsubscribing from that.
Like 40,000 people unsubscribed, yeah.
Right. That was likely what told Wizards, halt, retreat, give up, we're getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
They could see 4th edition flash before their eyes. But if people had just scattered out amongst hundreds of games, yes, it would have, a rising tide lifts all boats, but most likely Wizards would have not, they would have seen Call of Cthulhu going up some, great, and Pathfinder going up some.
Mm-hmm.
But if a lot of those people had gone to games that were more suited to them in the long term, then maybe Wizards wouldn't have given up so easily. Now, in the long run, that would have been bad for them, but it also would have been bad for the role-playing community as a whole, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because this was your point. I'm sorry, I kind of took over.
Oh, that's fine. I'm just glad that the debacle has been tentatively shelved. They've walked it back. They've, said what they've said, and I'm hoping they stick to it. But I can see that there is still a huge amount of distrust towards WotC.
Yes.
And it's very valid. They've shown that they can't be trusted. So they're going to have to earn back that lost trust, however long it takes.
I don't know if they'll ever be able to earn mine back.
Maybe not. But, you know, I'm just waiting for them to try.
Yes.
I want to see what they're willing to do to earn back that trust.
And that's the important thing, is this all just PR?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's definitely PR.
Yes, but I mean, is that all there is to it? If they get people coming back enough and they're like, okay, things are smoothed over, we gave up on that fifth edition SRD, whatever, we'll focus on this and we'll just slide into the future and worry about that, you know, later on when things have calmed down, then we can slip in a little bit here and a little bit there, and eventually maybe they won't be able to do anything about the fifth edition SRD, but maybe that means a higher push towards microtransactions in the future.
Oh, there's definitely a push towards microtransactions.
But I mean, even more so. They're like, we can't get a cut of these other people's projects, so we'll just raise the prices on our microtransactions or make it more microtransactions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think their VTT is going to struggle in the first place anyway, but that's just me.
Well, and I think their VTT is going to be that's where they're going to just absolutely inundate people with the transactions.
Yes.
You know, you've got like, pay $5 for so many D&D bucks or whatever they're going to call them.
Oh, yeah.
Probably gold coins.
Yeah, probably gold.
But that's how they're going to make their money. Is they're going to turn that VTT into a microtransaction nightmare.
Right. And it's,
in which case, go for it. It's going to flop spectacularly.
Well, somebody made an excellent point. One of the content creators I was watching, they were talking about how if they get people to play one D&D on their VTT, Dungeons and Discourse was talking about this. And it's basically comes down to whales, right? They're looking for big spenders, just like in any video game, microtransactions. And what they want to see is people jump in there to that 3D Unreal Engine-based VTT that they're going to have. And so, okay, yeah, you want to have, you get your miniature to match your character, right? But everybody's going to have basic stuff. You're very basic. I have a gnome fighter, right? So you have a gnome that's got a weapon, maybe a sword or whatever. But if you want to make it look like your character, that's going to be a few bucks. You know, to choose the way their armor looks. And, oh, they actually use a different, they don't use a sword. They use a hammer or a mace. And you a little bit of money to change the colors on them. And, oh, they'll have different color suites you can choose. And little customizations here and there. Freaking, special, you know, make the face look the way you want it to look. All these little details. And it'll be all available. It's a little bit of money here and a little bit of money there and a little bit of money there. And then when everybody's playing, they've all got their normal or slightly modified miniatures. But then you show up with this gorgeous ass, fully detailed miniature. Only cost you $5-$10, let's say. Okay, cool. That encourages your friends who, with FOMO, fear of missing out, to spend a little bit of money of their own. Oh, you know what? I just want to make my character look a little better. But then they earn new armor. You know, they get some new armor in the game from playing this adventure. Oh no, now I gotta spend a little money to, because I'm wearing plate armor, but my character is shown in chainmail. I gotta change that so it fits. So a little bit of money for some chainmail, or some armor, a little bit of money to make it look right, and so on, and so on. So it's not just the dungeon master spending the money for the books and all that, which is what they're primarily making their money off of now. They're wanting to get the players to open their wallets. And that's fine. Great. More power to them. I'm not going to do it. But
well, you already did do it. You went and went to Hero Forge and had a custom mini made.
No, my wife did.
No, for your halfling barbarian. Didn't you go to Hero Forge for that?
Oh, no. Ten found that on Amazon.
Ah. But that's my point, though. People have been going to places like Hero Forge and whatever to get custom minis made. And they're paying like $50 for this custom mini.
Yes.
So having the VTT offer you like $5 to upgrade your avatar, that's not out of the realm of reason.
No,
they're already going out and buying whatever. And if they don't want to change the look of their character when they get new armor or a new weapon or whatever, then so be it. It doesn't change the game any. You're just, your character doesn't have, you know, doesn't look like, say they got this cool new axe instead of a sword.
Right. But there's going to be that, hey, it's just a little money here. It's, why not spend a buck to change the weapon? Why not, you know, spend a dollar or two to change the armor or whatever? A little bit here, a little bit there. Of course, I don't know what the prices are going to be.
No, we're just guesstimating.
And that's fine. We're kind of getting off topic in the first place anyway, but I just feel like we've done, while we may have won the battle, we haven't won the war, right?
Right.
And urging people to go to Pathfinder in the long run may have done our rebellion against Wizards of the Coast a disservice. You know? Yes, it made a very solid point in the short run, but in the long run, a good portion of those people are just going to go running right back to Wizards when they should have been directed to another game. And now, since they've been burned by spending money on, you know, Pathfinder rulebook, maybe a bestiary and some other stuff, depending on what they bought, are they going to be willing to go out and buy Shadow of the Demon Lord or Dungeon Crawl Classics or Mirkborg when they already have 5th edition books, right?
Yes, but I still see this as a net positive, because if all they knew was 5th edition D&D,
yes,
and now they've taken to playing, even though they didn't end up enjoying it, Pathfinder 2, they can still see, hey, I don't like the game as a whole, but I like this point here, this point here, this point here. And they start talking to their friends, and their friends go, well, hey, this game here, which you haven't tried, has this kind of a setup. And this game over here has this kind of a setup.
Right.
So they start testing out all these other systems. Because a lot of systems out there, you can get something similar to the SRD, so you can tinker around with it without actually buying the books.
Right.
And you can get an idea of, hey, I like this idea, in which case what they end up doing is they may go back to 5th edition D&D, but I can guarantee you their homebrewed game is not going to be fully 5th edition. They're going to use, you know, the inspiration type mechanic from this game. They're going to use the initiative thing from this game over here. They're going to pick and choose the ideas that they like to make something new.
Right. And to be honest, rather than going out and buying the Pathfinder books and feeling burned by buying books in a game that they eventually decide they don't like is, in a way, their fault. And I don't want to victim blame or anything here, but you can download the Pathfinder books for free. They have a website. You can go and get the digital versions of their core books, and I believe some other stuff, for free.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have to go and buy the core rule book, the Bestiary, and Advanced Player's Guide, and all these other books until they had looked through the digital book and gone, yeah, hey, I'm okay with it. Maybe made it to you use it to make a character, and the dungeon master, let's say, runs a game or two and they decide it's not for them, instead of almost everybody in the group having bought books to have them on hand, maybe only one person bought books. So then maybe they're more likely to go, okay, well, you know, we didn't spend a lot of money on that, so let's try Dungeon Crawl Classics next. I've heard good things about it. Or Shadow of the Demon Lord, another favorite of mine now. Or Conan, which I absolutely love, by the way. Huge fan of the 2D20 system. So cool. But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There were options.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that may have made a slightly less of an impact on Pathfinder sales. Maybe instead of selling out in eight, you know, all their books in 2 weeks, maybe it would have taken three. Woo!
I'm still glad they did it, just because the impact that it made was so resounding Wizards of the Coast had to do something. They were staring down the very distinct possibility that they were going to go under. I know that sounds ridiculous, but if you lose your player base, and not just upset them, but lose them, which is what they were very close to doing, you go under. Yeah. Period.
Well, some people say, well, since they, you know, D&D is only responsible for 100 million to 150 million of their sales every year, and Magic the Gathering sells over $1 billion a year, that it's not that big of an impact. But after all the little controversies, and some big controversies regarding Magic the Gathering in the last 4 or 5 months, including Magic 30th edition, the 30th anniversary edition, selling, you know, 4 booster packs for $1,000. They weren't even legal cards, you know, stupid shit like that. That already had their Magic player base pissed off. But, oh, you know, maybe they're going to change in the coming year. Then they see in January how Wizards and Hasbro are treating the D&D community. They would have just basically told them their main customer base, the Magic customers, that, nope, Wizards literally don't give a fuck.
Well, and you also got to remember, a good portion of their Magic the Gathering players are also D&D players.
Right. So, yeah, it's a... I'm sure they're going to be very careful in the future about doing stupid shit like this.
Oh, I doubt that. No, they're going to wait for things to die down. They're going to try something else. And the people who are watching them are going to blow it up again, and they're going to get punched in the nose again.
Right.
They're greedy, and they don't know their player base.
Yeah.
They've already proved that. Yeah. So unless they bring somebody in who actually understands the player base and listens to the player base, they're going to repeat this mistake over and over and over again.
Yeah. But to be honest, I hope that the people that are wanting a new home other than D&D, and they were burned and they did not like Pathfinder, or maybe they tried Dungeon Crawl Classics or some other game and they just didn't like it, and they're thinking of, you know, sticking with D&D, my opinion would be, fine, play some 5th edition. You already bought the books, they're yours. Just don't buy new stuff. Not yet. Because Matthew Colville has a game coming. Critical Role has their own game system coming. Kobold Press has a new game system coming. That, look to those games. Some of them, like Colville's game, he expects to have out by the end of the year. I'm not sure on the timetables for the others, but I expect Kobold Press is going to want to get theirs out ASAP. So,
looking forward to it.
Those are games that people need to look to, because they will not be D&D, but their whole goal is to replace D&D. The critters are going to be all over the game coming from Critical Role, for sure.
That's almost a given.
Yeah, I'm going to buy all three of them, is my intention. In fact, sight unseen, if they show up on Kickstarter, I'm backing them. Why? Because they need the support. But also, you know what? I'm not buying one D&D. I might as well spend that money elsewhere on people that actually give a damn about the community.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, rather than just giving up and going back to your 5th edition and expecting to buy one D&D in the future, just get back onto that stupid-ass Wizards of the Coast treadmill, just don't take one failure, you know, one game that you went to that you didn't like. Don't take that as a reason to go back to D&D and stick with it forever. Because some of you are. Instead, keep your options open. Look for sales. Try different games when they come up on sale. I have a game I'm going to be talking about in the next segment that I bought for 70% off recently. So there's options out there. Look at DriveThruRPG, for example. They have sales every month. And you can find all kinds of cool games, print on demand or just digital. Look at that as a way to expand your horizons and see what's out there without blowing massive amounts of dough. Anyway, so that's all I had.
Yeah, I agree. Let's just hope that people can learn to adapt from the things, or, you know, the other games that are around. Find something that works for them.
Are we done with this shit yet?
Okay, so that's about all for this week. Do you have any final thoughts before we go?
Yeah, I finally saw the remaining episodes of Critical Role. They're Vox Machina Season 2.
Oh, yeah. Us too.
It is excellent.
Yes.
I know they made some serious changes, but they weren't changes enough to make it a bad show. So the people who actually, you know, watched or listened to the podcast, they know what really happened. So it's kind of like one of those situations where it's like, I know what really happened, but this is what you've seen, and it's excellent.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, when you have a book that gets adapted to a movie, mm-hmm. there's going to be changes because
right.
it's, you know, it's hard to bring a book to the screen. So without having some changes, I know Ten was super happy because she was like, when we went into the last episode, she was dreading it. Because at the cliffhanger at the end of season one drove her nuts. She was just knowing, oh, we're going to get left on another cliffhanger. Oh, it's going to suck and all that. And we're going to have to wait till season three to see what happens. And it turned out, no spoilers really here, but yeah, it was a nice way to leave it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's stuff to do, but it's not, okay, we're sitting here, and the very end of the season is a bunch of dragons rushing in. You're not, you know, leaving it right on an impending battle. So,
right.
I was pretty happy with it overall.
But, see, for me, having watched the entire first campaign, I can see the things that they're setting up that you don't know about.
Right.
That's going to basically, in next season, that's going to hit you blindside. And that's what I find enjoyable, because I know it's coming, and you don't.
Of course. Now, I want to ask you this, though, since you're a critter.
Mm-hmm.
Comparing season one to season two, which do you think was better? Of the TV show, obviously.
Tough. Because season one was more, it was more of the home game. You know, it wasn't as polished. So it had more of that, you know, gaming at the table feel. Season two was much more polished, much more, I don't want to say manufactured, but it was a show. And I liked the majority of season two, or campaign two, I should say.
I'm not talking campaigns. I mean, season one of Legend of Vox Machina compared to season two of Legend of Vox Machina.
Oh, I thought you were talking about campaigns.
Yeah, no, the TV shows.
Because they're bringing in the next series, or next series that they're coming out with is for campaign two.
Right. I'm saying of the TV show, comparing season one to season two, which one do you feel was better?
I liked season two better.
Really?
But because, you know, season one, they're trying to show, you know, these are a bunch of, you know, nobodies. They, you know, nobody knows them. Nobody cares for them. They're a bunch of, you know, losers, and they're coming together. And then season two, they're like, okay, they've proven that they're not losers. And then they throw this epic, you know, shit happens to them. So now they've got everybody's relying on these quote unquote heroes to save the day.
I mean, I could see that, but I felt like there was too much backfill, too much backstory. A lot of looking back the, you know, where Grog came up. And I know it was necessary to tell bits of the tale in that season, but it was not just him. It was Vex and Vax, of course, Scanlan, don't want to go too much into that particular thing, but a little bit of his past, just things like that. And it seems like it drug a little bit more. There wasn't as much action, adventure, or comedy. I mean, there was in large bursts, but there was also more story, talk.
But like you were saying, though, it was very necessary because you have to set up for Vex and Vax's issue, you know, that they ran across in the Fey Realm.
Yes.
That was you to understand, because otherwise, you know, the guy's just a dick and they can just blow it off. Yeah, don't even deal with this guy. He's just a dick. Ignore him. But if you see what led up to that, you can see why they can't just say, fuck you, you're a dick.
Yeah.
And if you look back at how Vex was in the first season, you can see where that bitch kind of attitude she had and her cold exterior came from.
Yeah.
So it was kind of necessary to give the backstory in this season to show why she is, or she was who she was, and how she's changing with the group.
Right.
The group is changing her, making her a little softer, so she's not just a cold-hearted bitch.
Yeah. And I don't think it was a bad season at all. Just, I don't think it was quite as enjoyable as the first season. But they have definitely set up the cards for season three to be a hell of a romp. So
I quite agree.
I'm hopeful about that. But there was one thing before I'd like to talk about before we go, as always. I mentioned last week, or mentioned earlier in this show, that I've been shopping. A few weeks ago, back in third week of January, I was just, you know, roaming around the internets looking for different games. Because, you know, back then there was a big push to see where you should go. If you don't want to play D&D 5th edition, what can you play instead? What's out there? What are options? And I'm pretty sure I've mentioned it before, but I'm a fan of Modiphius and their home system, the 2D20 system.
I think you've mentioned it once or 100 times.
I have Octung Cthulhu. I have Conan, Adventures in an Age Undreamed Of. I have Dune, the role-playing game. All those are 2D20. Well, of course, that brought me to bringing me to Modiphius's U.S. store. And this was like around the 21st, I think, of January. I went there and stumbled across a sale they had during the month of January. There was their January sale, which might as well have been We Smell Blood in the Water sale. And pretty much everything in their store was on sale. Some things up to 70% off. Well, I had previously looked at this particular game, specifically the slipcase edition of this game, normally priced at $99.99. I got it for under $24 plus shipping. It was 70% off, and that game was John Carter of Mars.
Mm-hmm.
I know you will recognize that. Immediately, it's an epic science fantasy game that is based on the writings from Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Yep.
It is amazing. A guy from the Old West finds himself transported to Mars, or in their language, Barsoom, where he has to fight alongside Martians. There's all kinds of factional politics, and it is just epic, awesome, cool shit. And if you've seen the movie John Carter that Disney put out, a decade or so ago?
Yeah.
That kind of gives you a bit of the feel, but it's not. You really need to read some of the books.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah, John Carter of Mars. $23 and change for a $99.99 set, which gives you the core book plus Phantoms of Mars campaign guide. You know, I don't usually use campaign guides, but they effectively sent it alongside in the slipcase, so whatever, I don't care. I'm going to play the hell out of this. And for people that are really into epic freaking fantasy, especially like a D&D type game with a little bit of science fantasy in there.
Mm-hmm.
This would have been a choice. Much like Conan for your epic swords and sandals type adventure games. Because the 2D20 system, you think, okay, well, it uses a D20, so that's awesome. It'll be like D&D. No. Because with this system, you have like, you have a few attributes in two different sets, right? You basically got attributes and some abilities. And if you want to take an action, like you want to stealth, you'll pick, okay, let's use this dexterity attribute, the number from it, and add it to the number from some appropriate ability, not because they have more broad groupings, right? So let's say you have something that's around burglary. So you want to combine those together, take those numbers, add them together, and that's your target number to roll on a D20. You need that number or less. Okay. You get to roll 2D20 for each time you meet or go under that number. That's a success. And sometimes most of the time, you just need one success. Sometimes you might need two if it's more difficult. Or three, or four, and super difficult things might even require five successes. But you only have 2d20. Oh, wait! Let's say it was a simple stealth. You want to sneak around the guard. Okay, you roll your 2d20. Both of them succeed. Cool. So you got your success and the extra success you mark down as momentum. So later, when you keep doing these things and you've built up a little bit of momentum, maybe you come up against a more difficult task. You've got to jump across the chasm. Okay, that's going to take 3 successes. All right, so you got your 2d20 that you get from the start. And let's say you burn 2 momentum. That gives you 2 more dice. You roll all 4 dice against your target number. Oh no, you only got 1 success. I'm sorry, you got 2 successes, but one of them was you rolled a 1. That's a critical. That gives you an extra success. Now you have 3 successes. You made the leap. Things like that, right? So you're gaining and losing momentum. But oh no, you're out of momentum and you have a difficult thing to do. How do you succeed? You look at your game master and you say, hey, I need to get you 3 dice from you. You want to roll 5? Okay, you can have those 3 dice. And he marks down 3 pips. Often those are called devil dice. So later, the dungeon master or a game master can burn those pips that you bought, that you gave him, to increase the difficulty and raise the tension later on in the session. I mean, you can't just immediately go, okay, now I'm going to burn them and now your difficulty is 5. No. But on a later thing, maybe something against someone else, doesn't matter. They can use those dice against you later on. It is so simple, but so much fun because you're betting against yourself later on. It's just too cool. Too cool. And the thing is that I think if you try to buy dice off of the Dungeon Master, other people can go, no, he's got too many. It depends on the game because they're all a little different. Different attributes and abilities and whatnot. So Dune is not the same as John Carter for abilities and whatnot. But it is really, really cool. Anyway, you have any thoughts on that?
No, but if people do check it out and become fans of Edgar Rice Burroughs, which you should.
Yes,
if you're playing any kind of fantasy role-playing game, it's a great resource.
Yes.
I recommend you look up Carson Napier as one of the other characters that you should look into. My personal favorite.
That's the thing, is maybe we should talk about that sometime in the future, is other older fantasy books and characters and settings that aren't currently being supported by role-playing games that people should look into. It's like, I know I wasn't really into him, but Michael Moorcock.
Oh, yeah, Elric of Melnibone.
I don't think there's even an active game based around Stormbringer. There used to be Stormbringer role-playing game, and I believe there was others.
Well, another one I'd say is the Vlad Taltos Zreg series.
Oh, yes. But anyway, let's save that for a future discussion, because that's going to be a good one. Anyway, that's all I had. So,
all I got.
Till next time, I'm Squirmus.
And I'm Bayless.
Generic catchphrase ending.
Well, look at that. You made it through an entire episode. Good for you. Now, here's your prize. Ads. Please drop by whatever service you heard this abomination of a podcast on, and give the show a great review. You can also come by our website squirmy.com, check out our blogs, podcasts, and other content, and leave some comments. Finally, join our Discord server. You can listen to us record Loop Mechanics live, and chat with other fans. You'll find the link on the website. Until next time, I'm the digital voiceover guy, telling you to kindly, fuck off.